Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Okay, you ready, Andreas? Let's get this ball rolling, shall we?
All right.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we're joined by Andreas Balsa. Andreas is CTO at Dopavision. Now, it's great to have you join us today, Andreas. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show.
Yeah, thanks for the nice intro, Ben. Happy to be here. Curious where the conversation will lead us. And yeah, hoping that we have lots of interesting stuff for the audience.
Yeah, I'm sure we do. And just to get us started, could you give us an introduction to your, a brief introduction to kind of your journey and how you got to CTO in your career?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I did a PhD in mathematics, but I had always had a huge interest in computers in general, software development, etc. Then I went on to become a management consultant, getting out of academia, obviously, and possibly setting the stage for the future career path. And then I went on to become project manager at an IT company, both more hardcore IT projects, but also strategic projects where it was about cost efficiency in growth and stuff like that. And then about 7 years ago, I kind of got in the direction where I really wanted to be. I became head of a business unit for product development in a company that produces and sells a hospital information system. So it's all about documenting the stay of a patient in the hospital and, of course, supporting the processes in all kinds of ways you can do using IT. And yeah, there I was responsible for software development and product management. Also my first actual leadership position. It was great fun. And also I had first touch points, of course, with medical device regulation, while the hospital information system as such is not a medical device, but it's a bit in the gray zone in between. And there are certain parts where you need to know in detail what medical device regulation would ask you to do. This was a medium-sized company, about 200 employees. And from there, I went on to take on my first CTO role. It was in a really small company, about 15 to 20 people. And there we were doing custom software solutions, both for car industry, but also again for medtech. And the most interesting project was for a company that sold radioactive water, if you like, to doctors and patients, kind of. And we supported them in the production and the logistics of this. So you can imagine there's all kinds of quality needed and quality assurance has to be in place. Yeah, and so I mean, this was custom software, as I said, and I got poached away from there by Dopavision. Also, I shifted from Munich to Berlin for that particular job at Dopavision just because the cause of Dopavision is simply great, and also the possibility to really shape the IT software processes and, of course, contribute to shaping the company and see the company grow. And so the whole package of what Dopavision does and what my job entails there was so exciting that it was a fairly easy decision to change and take on that second CTO role.
Brilliant. And I'd like to get a bit of insight into Dopavision, if you don't mind, and what that is as a business and what service you provide there, if you could.
So Dopavision is about slowing myopia progression using a digital treatment, obviously. Kind of obviously. Myopia is a disease that starts when you're quite young, like 6 to 10 years old, and then it becomes worse and worse every year until it stops at the end of puberty in your late teens. You cannot cure it after it has happened. So the only thing you can try and do is to slow down this progression. There are treatments out there, but they are not, none of them is perfect. None of them works for all patients. And they are all kind of actual treatment, eye drops, contact lenses. And yeah, the great thing is that our founder had the idea how to combine recent research results into something that we are convinced will turn into a digital treatment, treatment in the sense, as I said, to slow down this progression. But one more word on myopia as such, it's hugely prevalent, and the prevalence has been increasing in the last 20, 30 years in almost all industrialized countries. So obviously Europe and the US, and even more so in Asia and particularly in China. And it has significant long-term consequences. So 20, 30 years after your progression stopped, your risk for having severe eye conditions up to retinal detachment is just many times higher than in regular eyes. How we plan to do this is using a particular light stimulus that needs to get sent into your eye. But this light stimulus doesn't need to be very strong. So a regular smartphone display actually suffices. And how we deliver this light stimulus is that we make the patients, the kids, play a virtual reality game. The game, of course, has certain restrictions to be suitable. And then in parallel with the game, you get this light stimulus. And you need to play this game a couple of minutes and a couple of times per day, of course, over several months or years. But simply by playing this virtual reality game, you have a good chance of becoming less myopic than you would without any treatment.
And I find it amazing how quickly, you know, companies react to tech possibilities.
Yeah, it's friendly that you say how fast companies react. I mean, of course, they do. However, I mean, in this universe of fast-paced startups, we are, well, I will not say slow, because the disease we are addressing is progressing so slowly, that makes us have a rather long development cycle, or not development cycle, but the time it takes to prove the effect, because you need to monitor these kids that that are in the trial. You need to monitor them for several months or years in order to prove that they are doing better, progressing slower than you would expect. And also, I mean, medical devices, as you know, are heavily regulated. We need to have very good processes in place, lots of documentation testing going on. So there is an ambivalence between of course we're working agile, we have Scrum processes in place, etc. And we would love to release smaller updates of our software every couple of weeks. But of course the whole documentation requirements and what can you do and what kind of updates can you give to trial participants, of course makes it slower than you would wish from everybody's startup and agile mindset. So, but that's also part of where some shaping is going on, because also the authorities don't have too much experience with trials and software that work in such a context as we do.
Mm. Amazing. What kind of technologies are you working with at Dopa Vision, if you don't mind giving us an insight into that?
At the moment, you're basically running a regular Android app, if you like. We're developing it using C# and Xamarin. Of course, we are creating log data. It's actually another natural innovation for a clinical trial. We are actually able to track whether and how long, etc., the patients are using the product. So we have a backend. Our backend is running on Microsoft Azure. We have app services there, and we also have storage tables there, which then get analyzed and reported, obviously. When we go to market, we, of course, want to also run on iOS. So that's something we have on the roadmap for the next year, actually, to make sure we are usable on both operating systems. And also, we are migrating over to Unity. The tech-savvy listener will have been wondering why we didn't mention any VR-related framework yet, but that's definitely also up and coming.
Brilliant. And then, so right now at Dopa Vision, if you could give us a bit of a sneaky insight into what you're working on, that would be incredible, if you're allowed to. I don't want to put you on the spot here, Andreas. I really don't. Don't want to land you in any hot water.
I'll do my best to not give all the company secrets away.
Yeah, but of course.
No. As I said, we have a game with a certain restriction. We developed the game on our own. We developed the game on our low budget before the current financing round, which we closed in summer. So we are very humble regarding our current game. What I want to say is I'm not convinced that this one game will make children happy to play several times a day for several months, several years. And we're approaching this with a three-pronged approach, I guess. Of course, we have ideas how to improve the current game. Improving is always relatively fast, but there's only so much you can do about the current setup. So we are starting to work with a game development studio to come up with a completely new game, very much broader, better approach to make it much more exciting. Hopefully, also have storyline progression, etc. So it's really just doesn't feel like you're playing the same game over and over again, but you're progressing inside the game. And we're also planning to set up a community of test users, because as I said, we have these trial participants, but they are trial participants, but they are exactly not guinea pigs that you can try anything on, because they need to have a very totally stable product that's accepted by authorities. So we're looking for ways to get more rapid user feedback to incorporate that in the ongoing development of the product. And so now I've been focusing on the game side. On the medical side, of course, there's also things to do. Most obvious and not a big secret, we don't have much of user management yet. We don't have any payment model subscription yet, because that's part of the business case that is important to have when the trial ends, like iOS migration, thinking about which devices to use. Also, there's more innovative hardware out there where our treatment could run on. So I'm still convinced, I'm very convinced. We have a lot of interesting topics on our roadmap. Also, again, showing the broad range of topics that you can cover working on such an innovative product.
And also, I was just thinking as you were talking there about, before I started doing these recordings a few years ago, I mean, I had no idea the importance of data, if we can open that can of worms now. Data is the center of almost everything and every decision in technology. How much does DopaVision rely on data then with its decision making?
Well, actually, let me start by simply saying how happy I am with our data collection, because for the reasons you pointed out, we took that decision very early on when we did our first prototype. We had logging in place at the same time we had our first prototype. So it's not that it was just very natural and very clear that we need to have a good logging architecture as well. And we kind of developed it our own. I mean, of course, using frameworks for submitting data, using framework for how you structure and store data. But to some extent, we combined existing tools on our own, and we are very happy because it is a lightweight and very stable mechanism. And I am getting questions here and there, how we did that logging and whether that's very complicated, et cetera. And every time I get that question, I'm so happy that we found a stable and lightweight solution for ourselves. And how important is data? So, well, at the moment, the clinical trial is starting, so we don't have a whole lot of log data to work on yet. But yeah, again, it's the possibility is huge, because as soon as you provide users with a choice, then you can evaluate later on which choice is taken, and then where you have to improve or where you put your focus, because nobody likes the other thing anyway, so no need to spend money on it. Our game, we're logging the reaction speed of patients, so you can track whether they improve. You can also just simply by knowing how long reaction takes, you can really tailor make the how fast the levels go, etc. Mm-hmm. And also with today's technology, it's just very easy to have all that tailor-made. So you don't need to have a solution one size fits all, but you can simply per patient take their concrete behavior and just adapt the treatment so that they have the most fun and are still challenged. I mean, on top of decision making, it's really just for the clinical trial, it's much more value or much more reliable data than, I mean, you have a trial where the patient needs to take a pill and then, or in amblyopia, you need to wear an eye patch. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you let these people do it for a couple of weeks and then you interview them and ask, hey, have you taken your pill? How many hours per day did you wear your eye patch? And then people try to memorize. And of course, they'll be more proud and think more of what they did than what they usually do. There are studies and research papers on the discrepancy between actual usage of a treatment and what people would say in interviews. And it's our data has such a high quality because we tell the patient. We implemented this feedback loop from. So there's the patient. The patient is anonymous. To me, has no permission. The patient is anonymous, but I still get some log data. And then I sent that log data on to our partner that takes care of the trial data. And they hand this data on to the doctor. So the patient comes to the visit to the doctor and the doctor doesn't ask, hey, how are you doing? But more like, so excellent. You're totally adhering to the therapy. Or they can say, yeah, unfortunately, you're not that happy with the treatment. You're not doing it so frequently. What can we do to change that? Mm. Change of mindset, change of the game.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And what's the future of dope vision? Where can you see the business in a, you know, tech is moving so fast these days. Even 6 months is you know, is probably an interesting flag point. But where can you see dope vision in, you know, 6 months, a year, a couple of years time? What's the future looking like?
Well, yeah, there's the business, and of course there's the tech part to the answer. Mm. Let me start out with the business side of things. It's really when the trial is successful and we have every reason to hope and believe that it will be, then there's really a huge scaling possible to come because, as I said in the beginning, prevalence of myopia is so high that it's very easy to imagine that we will have not thousands, but possibly even millions of users globally. Wow. So once we are proven effective, there is this kind of growth that you would expect that you might expect in a startup that might happen. We were just currently in the structured setting up for that. So there's scaling and international and business involved. And on the tech side, at the moment we're thinking about an app, you know, controlled setting with consumer electronics, but you know, technology, there's also wide. You can also imagine lots of things where we can be even better because, I mean, it's about a light stimulus to your eye and I mean, with like augmented reality and eye trackers becoming available everywhere, it's very easy to imagine that treatment being even more non-invasive than today because today you still have to wear this VR headset, but possibly there'll be a future where you can get the treatment and you're not affected in your everyday life at all while getting it. So technology and possibilities for that treatment will evolve. Also, I mean, we're also looking, but I can't go into detail, we're also looking into other eye or brain conditions where you can, on which you can work on with light stimulus in a similar fashion to our myopia treatment. So we may also be looking to different indications and different usage of the similar technology as we are developing today.
Wow, that is so exciting. I mean, it really is. I mean, you're at the perfect point. I mean, I'd say to join the business, you know, on this period of growth, at this stage, how exciting that would be. That would be incredible. That's surely every tech person's dream, surely. Every engineer's dream is this. You know, I've recently seen a lot of, you know, businesses working in healthcare and technology. Do you think that we're about to see a huge tipping point now with health tech?
Definitely. There's no doubt about it. The technology enables lots of things. Science is also it's also exciting to see what science finds out in diseases where you would expect that they have been known for mankind. Lots of possibilities, lots of exciting things going on. Also, the regulatory bodies are more and more supporting and enabling it. In Germany, there is something called DiGA, Digital Health Applications. It's kind of a fast track to get reimbursed by health insurances for an app that has a provable medical benefit. And other European countries are thinking about setting up something similar because, in general, it's widely known or widely expected that there's much more innovation in this area to come, and that it helps healthcare and thereby population and the health and insurance system as well.
Brilliant. I mean, Andreas, I really could sit here all morning and chat to you about this. I really could. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but there's another question that's just on my mind that I feel like I have to ask. And it's about how you learn about these tech developments, because what you're working on is quite cutting edge, and it's ahead of the curve with the technology that's available, it seems. And I was just curious to find out what resources you rely on to learn about this stuff and how you continue to learn about it.
Well, I mean, there's two parts. As usual, there is, there's part about network, having connections, finding things externally. But it's also a lot about just having the right people, because when you have the people who are excited and passionate about this, then they will put effort into staying up to speed without considering this an effort, just because they like being on top of the game. Mm. And on this network side of things, I'm also happy to point out that, well, we have great academic partners. We're doing all these experiments, etc., with renowned university from across the globe. So we got excellent key opinion leaders in science on myopia and related areas that are happy to support us, work with us, and thereby enrich our own thinking by bringing in their ideas and their insights. And as I said before, we have a great team internally. Mm-hmm. So we have information going back and forth internally, and everybody giving their sparks and ideas to how to make the company and the product even better.
You know, if there's someone listening out there who, say is an engineer and they're kind of looking for a new role, I imagine that you'll be recruiting at some point soon on your period of growth. So just if they're listening and thinking this company sounds incredible, which I'm sure a lot of people will be thinking that, what kind of people do you look for in terms of recruiting?
So in terms of engineers, key is actually to be on top of the technologies that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. But I'm always looking for people to have a broader view. So I like engineers who are also interested in the medical side of things we're doing, to understand the overall context where we're heading. In general, we are planning to double our size roughly during the next 2.5-3 years. And we're currently looking for product manager, and that position is actually not so easy to fill. So any interested listener in the audience, happy to get your application. The range of topics and therefore the range of skills that we're looking for is just very broad, and we're trying to find the ideal candidate because, as we have discussed, Ben, it goes from gaming, game development, working with end users, also with stakeholders, can be from kids to doctors, professors, etc. But preferably, the candidate also has experience with quality management system, processes, documentation, medical device regulation. There's a lot of tasks and a lot of skills you can bring in here. You can also learn them. You don't. We're totally aware that the ideal candidate might not exist. But having a good interest and a good starting position definitely makes you a good candidate. And I'm also sure that working here and getting that kind of broad knowledge and experience in this innovative growing field, as we discussed, that's also worth a lot in future life. Mm. In case someone ever moves on from Love Evolution to another career opportunity.
Yeah, great. I mean, I would absolutely love it if this podcast found you that person. So you must
be absolutely amazing. Yeah,
you must let me know if that person, you know, gets in touch or sends a CV through, and they've heard about about Dope Vision through this podcast. You must let me know. That would be, that would make my day. But anyway, I think that's a really nice point to end on. So yeah, thanks so much for taking the time to do this, Andreas. You're a very busy man, I'm sure. So yeah, I really appreciate it. I really do appreciate it that you you've taken the time to do this.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot for from my side as well. It was a lot of fun discussing with you, and happy to spread the word and stay in touch.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.